Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Ayin Gimal. Today's daf has been sponsored by Mr. Jerry Harari in memory of Yosef Ben Simcha Shenftar B'Kitzur Yamim V'Shanim. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. Today's daf has been dedicated in memory of Moshe Ben Miriam. Mr. Mo Hittery, in memory of Mo Hittery by his family. Today's daf has been dedicated in memory of Hacham Baruch, Rafael ben Miriam, and Abraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We are starting on Ayin Gimal. And we are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9 lines down, the last word on the line, Itmar. Now just to review an important machloket that we learned yesterday, I just want to clarify it. The machloket between Abaye and Rava in the law of mitasek b'shabbat. The case that Abaye and Rava argued on was a case where a fellow had intention to cut something on Shabbat, chituch, and he wanted to cut something that he thought was detached from the ground, and unintentionally, he cut something that was attached to the ground. So Rava came along and said that that is a case of mitasek, meaning since he was preoccupied with doing something permissible, it is permissible to cut things that are detached from the ground. And then he ended up cutting something that was attached. So he says one would be patur from a korban hatat. Whereas Abaye argued, Abaye said, no, that's not a case of mitasek, that you're going to be patur from hatat. According to Abaye, only if a person did something that he did not fulfill his intention at all, which means, for example, he had intention to pick up something from the ground. For example, in the case of the knife fell in the vegetable patch, and his intention was to pick up the knife, and his preoccupation in picking up the knife, he ended up pulling something out of the ground. But if you had intention to cut, and you ended up cutting, so I don't care if it was for intention for detach, and then you ended up doing it attached, that is mitasek, and you're going to be hayav in such a case. That's a machloket Abaye and Rava. Our Gemara today is going to bring us some other scenarios where they also had their argument in. The Gemara begins, Itmar, we have an Amoraic statement, Itkaven lezrok shtayim. Let's say a fellow is standing in the public domain. His intent is to throw 2 amot. Vezarak arba. But in the end, he threw it 4 amot. Now we know to throw something 4 amot in the Rishut Rabbim, it's hayav. So Rava amar patur. Abaye amar hayav. So again, we have the same machloket. Rava amar patur. Why does Rava say you're patur from a hatat in such a case? Because de lo kam ichaven lezikad arba, because barma he didn't have kavana for the throwing of 4 amot, which would be hayav. His intention was always to throw 2, so he was mitasek beheter. He was preoccupied with doing something that's permissible, and it came out that he did something that was forbidden. Abaye amar hayav. Abaye says hayav. Why? Deha kam ichaven lezikad bealma. The bottom line, since the guy intended to throw, so that already makes the guy guilty of a korban hatat. Just like we learned earlier. According to Abaye, the guy had kavanah to cut. So I don't care if his kavanah was to cut something permissible. Bottom line, since his kavanah was to do cutting, and he ended up cutting, so therefore it is punishable by korban hatat. Same thing over here. The guy had intention to throw. So therefore, even if his intention was to throw 2 amot, and he threw 4 amot, he's subject to korban hatat. Next case, kasabur ishut yachid. Let's say the guy thought he was standing in the private domain, v'nimset ishut rabim, and in truth he was standing in the public domain. Obviously, he must have transported something for amot. So the Rava amar patur, the Abaye amar hayav. Again, the same machlok between Rava and Abaye. Rava amar patur, Rava says patur. Why? Te'alu mechaben zikad isura. Oh, so in this case over here, the guy didn't have kavanah to throw something be'isur, because he thought he was standing in the Rishut Yachid. If you're standing in the Rishut Yachid, you're allowed to throw as much as you want. So therefore, he was mitasek and doing something that he thought was permissible, thinking that he is in the private domain. But what? In truth, he was in the public domain. So in that case, he's considered patur from hatat, because he's mitasek.
Abaye Amar Hayav Deha Kamikabin Zika Be'alma.
Again, Abaye says, bottom line, since the guy had intent to throw, and he threw, so therefore you're going to be Hayav Korban Chatat. So basically we have three cases where they argued. Let's review the three cases where we have the argument of Mitasek. Number one is the case of Haticha, that we had on yesterday's daf. Nitkaven lahtoch et ha-talush ve-hatach et ha-mechubat. The second case is, he was in the Rishut Rabim, he was nitkaven to throw two amot, and he threw four amot. Third case is, he was in the Rishut Rabim, but he thought he was in the Rishut Yahid, and he threw four amot. In all those three cases, Rava said, patur from Korban Chatat. The Gemara says, v'sericha. You need all three cases. She's implicit in the sericha is, what do you need all three cases for? Which means, technically we could learn the deen from one of the cases. Why repeat the same principle, three different scenarios? So the Gemara says, v'sericha. Now you need all the cases. The iyashmi'inan kamaita, because if you only told me the first case, was the case of the haticha, where you had kavanah to cut something that was talush, and you ended up cutting something that was mechubad, ba'ahu ka'amar rava, and then in that case Rava will tell you patur, why? Da'a lo kamikaven atichad isura. Because clearly he did not have kavanah over there to cut something that was forbidden. His clear intention was to cut something that was permissible. Aval nitkaven lizrok shtayim. But in the case where he had kavanah to throw two, vizarak arba, and he ended up throwing four, de arba belo tarti lo mizrekale, which means you can't throw four without going through two, which is if you throw four amot, you gotta go through two amot, which means, in this case, I would have might have said Rava will be more stringent, because two amot is actually part of the isur, it's part of the four. Cutting something that's detached has nothing to do with cutting something that's attached. But throwing two amot is like half of four amot. So therefore you might have argued and said, since throwing two amot is, you have to go through two amot to get to four amot, or four amot's got to pass through two, so you might have thought that part of his intention is fulfilled there, and therefore he could be hayav. So Gemara says, even so, I might have thought that he agrees to Abaye, that's why you need that case. To tell me, even in that case, you're going to be patur. And if you only told me the second case, meaning the case of kavanah to throw two, and it ended up going four, I would say, in this case, Rava said patur. Because bottom line, he didn't have kavanah to throw four. But in the third case, where he thought he was standing in the private domain, but he was really standing in the public domain, but he had intention to throw four amot. He just made a mistake with the shoot he was standing in. I would have thought, Emma Modilel Abaye. I would say, maybe in that case he agrees to Abaye that you're going to be Hayab. So Gemara says, Sericha. That's why you need that case as well. So each case adds on another Hadushim, which is the first case is obvious. First case was Hatichat Heter. That was your Kavanah. You're definitely going to be Patur. The second case gets a little more interesting because really your Kavanah was to throw two. Now two is really part of the larger Milakha throwing four. So you might have thought that maybe that case is a little more Hayat. No. And the third case is the biggest Hadush because there you had Kavanah to throw four. I mean, your Kavanah was to throw the Shi'ud of four Amot. But what? You just mixed up what domain you were standing in. And therefore, Rabbi needed to tell you in all three cases that you are Patur. Tanan, we have the Mishnah. It's actually the next Mishnah that we're going to learn. Avot melachot arba'im chaser achat. Right, there's 439 melachot. Well, the way the Mishnah says it, 40 melachot minus one. Ve'avinan ba. And the Gemara analyzes. Minyana lamali. Why does the Mishnah feel it necessary to give me the number 39? We know how to count. Just list all the melachot. And I can figure it out myself. Why does the Mishnah have to tell us there are 39 melachot on Shabbat? V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan said, this is a Gemara we mentioned a few times already, She'im asa'an kulam be'alem echad, Rabbi Yohanan told us, Hidush, that if you did all the 39 melachot in one lapse, hayav al kol achat v'achat, you're going to be hayav for each one. Like we learned earlier, melachot halukot, that the melachot of Shabbat are separate. Each one stands on its own, and therefore you hayav 39 times. That's why the Mishnah said 39, which is that's the maximum amount of korban hatatz in one lapse that you could bring. So Kemara says, Bishlama la Abaye, according to Abaye, that holds that in these cases that we just mentioned, he holds that you're going to be hayav hatat, da'amar ki hay gavna hayav, that he said in these cases that we just mentioned, hayav hatat, mashkahatla, we have a scenario to explain that Mishnah, the yada, the isura, the Shabbat, you can say, he knew that it was Shabbat, he knew the isur of Shabbat, v'yada' la isur melachot, and he also knew that the melachot were forbidden, v'kata'a b'shi'urin, and he just made a mistake in the measurement, meaning, I have to figure out how do I have a case where a guy is going to bring 39 hata'ot on Shabbat, which means the guy, to bring a case like that, has to know it's Shabbat, but he doesn't know melachot. He has to be a shogeg in melachot. Now, if he's a shogeg in the melachot, so then he doesn't know any of the melachot, and so how does he know Shabbat? So it gets a little tricky, which means when we said that you're a zadon Shabbat, you know Shabbat, it means you have to know Shabbat through one of the melachot. So we have to figure out a case. So according to Abi, we have no problem. You could say, the guy knows it's Shabbat, and he also knows melachot, and still you could be hayav a korban. Why? Let's take a case where the guy had kavana to throw two, and he ended up throwing four. Abaye holds in that case hayav korban hatat. So you had cases where you could be hayav in the case of mitasek. Or let's say the guy, he knows that cutting is forbidden on Shabbat. He knows lahtok something from something that's attached is asur. And what did the guy do? The guy went and he had kavanah to cut something that was detached and ended up cutting something that was attached. He'll be chayav korban hatat according to Abaye. So according to Abaye, we have scenarios where you could know Shabbat, you could know the melachot, and still be chayav korban hatat. So the Mishnah has an understanding. Ela l'rava. But according to Rava, Damar Patur, but according to Rava, it says in those cases, you're going to be Patur from Korban Hatat, Hechi Mashkachat La, Bezadon Shabbat, Beshigat Melachot. How do you have a case where you can say the guy knows it was Shabbat, but doesn't know Melachot? Again, if he doesn't know any of the Melachot, so then, how is he considered Zadon Shabbat? Which means Zadon Shabbat means he knows the Shabbat. With what does he know Shabbat through? Oh, correct. This Gemara also repeats itself. The answers are going to be familiar to us. The Gemara says, Hani ha isabana kerem Yohanan. If you hold like Rabbi Yohanan's opinion, it's okay. Why? The Amar that he said, Kevan sheshagag bekaret, afal piche zid belav. Rabbi Yohanan's opinion, if you remember earlier, was, even if a guy knows the melacha, he knows the issud, but he just doesn't know that it's punishable by karet, that's considered a shogeg case. So I can say the Mishnah is very good. Mashkachatla diadama shabbat belav. He knew Shabbat, meaning that all the 39 melachot were forbidden. Well, he just didn't know that it's punishable by karet. That's why he can have a case of Hayav 39. But if he holds like Rabbi Yishuv ben Lakish, the Amar Ad Sheyishgog Belav VeKaret, the Rabbi Yishuv ben Lakish says to be a shogeg, you have to be ignorant of everything, the Isur and the Karet, everything. So how could you be a case of Zadon Shabbat and not know any of the Melachot? With what did you know Shabbat? So the Gemara says, the Adala le Shabbat b'mai. How did you know Shabbat? The Adala b'tchumin v'alibad Rabbi Akiva. Gemara says, there is another Isur de Oraita according to Rabbi Akiva that is not part of the 39 melachot. That is the Isur of Tchum, which means that you're not allowed to walk out of the boundaries
of, let's say, the city on Shabbat. Rabbi Akiva holds that that is Isur Doraita. So I can say, the guy was Zadon Shabbat. He knew that you were Hayab. He knew that there was Isur Shabbat. Which Isur? He knew Isur Tehumin Doraita according to Rabbi Akiva. But he didn't know any of the 39 Menachot. But he could be Zadon Shabbat. Why? How does he know? With what does he know Isur Shabbat? Tehumin. Therefore, in that case, when he transgresses all 39, it will be Hayav to bring 39 melachot. That's the way we have to answer for Rava. But according to Abaye, you could come along and say, he knew it's Shabbat, and you could even say, he knows the melachot. And that's how he's Adon Shabbat, because he knows the melachot, he knows them. Sari of Hatat. Yeah, in a case where you were mitasek, which means he didn't commit to throw two, and he threw four, Abaye says, in that case, you're Hayav Hatat. So therefore, you can have a scenario. The way that the Gemara's language is, he was Tu'e b'shi'urin, which means his mistake was in the amounts, which means he wanted two and he ended up throwing four cases like that. So therefore, we have different ways to explain how you're going to get to 39. Comes out, we have three different ways to explain how you can get to 39 Hataot. Either it's according to Abaye, where you were Tu'e b'shi'urin, or it could be according to Rabbi Yochanan, where you knew the melachot, you just didn't know karet, or it could be according to Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, where he didn't know anything, but he knew Isur Tehumin, and that makes him Zadon Shabbat Shegegat Melachot.
He didn't know the shiurim. Would that be, he didn't know the shiur?
What does that mean, so he did not know the shiur?
He didn't know if it was two, a motor four, a motor six, or what constant. He knew you couldn't carry, but he didn't. He didn't know how many feet. He didn't know any issue. How would that?
I need more information to answer that case. The Mishnah continues. Avot melachot arba'im haser achat. One of the most famous Mishnayot in Masechet Shabbat. It now lists for us the 39 melachot. And it says, Avot melachot, the primary melachot, arba'im haser achad, of 40 minus 1. Now, there are aharim that discuss this question, why would the Mishnah use this terminology, 40 minus 1? Just tell us 39. I will share with you one potential answer that the Tosfot Yom Tov says on the Mishnayot. He says that if you count them, there's 39 melachot. One of the 39 melachot is kosher. It's making a knot. One of the 39 melachot is tofer. That is sewing, stitching, making a stitch. And he says that when you make a stitch, it's not enough to make the stitch. You only chayav on tofer if you knot it at the end. So technically, if you go through all 39 melachot individually, you're going to end up really doing 40. Because in stitching, it's really stitching plus tying. So it's actually 40, but it's minus 1. Because you're not really going to be hayab for the tying over there. It's really the tofer. So you do 40, but you only have to bring 39 hatawat. That's one potential answer to the question. Avot melakot arba'im haser achat. Let's go one at a time and explain them. Hazoreya, one that sows, S-O-W. That means he is putting the seeds in the ground. V'achoresh, that is somebody that is plowing. Now, normally you plow first to soften the ground, and then you put the seeds. It's interesting here that the Mishnah puts seeding first, and then plowing. So the Gemara will analyze the fact that the Mishnah chose this order. The third melacha, v'akotzer. Kotzer would be reaping. That's after the wheat, let's say, grows, you take them, you cut them. Me'amer would mean gathering, which means you take the wheat that you just harvested and you put them in bundles. Ve'hadash. Dash is one who threshes. Now what is threshing? The wheat is in a chaff. It's surrounded by a chaff that's like its shell. Okay, inside of it is the kernel. How do you separate the wheat from its chaff? So what they did is they place it on the ground and they have, let's say,
either boards that they bang it with, or they walk an animal over it and step on it. They thresh it, so that cracks the wheat out of its chaff. So now you have it separate. However, it's still all mixed together. You crack them, and now you have chaff and a kernel lying on the floor together. So the next melacha is the hazoreh, that is winnowing. Winnowing means they take now the mixture of chaff and wheat kernel that is separate, and they throw it into the wind. What happens is the wind blows the chaff, which is lighter, away, and the kernel that's heavier just falls down. That is called zoreh, winnowing. Okay? Now, the haborer, haborer would be selecting. So that she tells us, that means you're selecting the psolet biyado, you're taking the bad from the good. Hatochen would mean grinding. The amelaked would be a form of sifting. That she explains, benapa, meaning you're using a sifter, which means a strainer in order to sift. Now the Gemara is going to ask that seemingly borer and meraked and actually zoreh, winnowing, it's all forms of separating good from bad. Gemara is going to ask, why do you need three separate merachot for zoreh, borer, and meraked? The halash. Number 11 would be lash, that would be kneading. Number 10, I should say, would be kneading. Kneading means you put the flour and the water together and mix them to make them one cohesive unit. The ha'ofeh, number 11, would be baking. Now, only question would be, where was their baking in the Mishkan? All these melachot have to have their sources in the Mishkan. Where was their baking? So, that she says, don't think we're talking about the baking of the bread, because even though there was lechem apanim in the Mishkan, but we need to find the melachot, not in the everyday, day-to-day of the Mishkan. You need to find the melachot in the construction of the Mishkan. So where was their baking in the construction? So he says, actually it was in preparing the dyes, D-Y-E-S, that they needed to dye the curtains that they had in the Mishkan. Now, how do they make the dyes? They take herbs that incidentally they planted. That's what they was planting in the Mishkan. They needed to plant seeds of these different type of herbs that they used to make dyes out of it. And then they would put it over the fire and they would boil it and make it into paint. So therefore, there was actual bishul in the Mishkan. Now let me tell you what the difference between bishul and ofeh is. Bishul is through cooking with water. Ofeh is more baking. So the Gemara will ask, you know, you really didn't have ofeh, you had bishul. So why would the Mishnah call it ofeh when in truth what you had is mevashel? But that's where you had fire, let's say, cooking in the Mishkan by cooking the dyes in order to dye the curtains. Exactly. Now we move on to number 12. Hagozez et asemer. Okay, one that shears. He shears the wool off an animal. Hamlabeno. Labeno, he whitens it, as she says, by going to the river and putting the wool in the river, so that cleans it, so that's considered whitening. Vehamenapetso. The pitzo would be combing it in order to, let's say, take out the tangles. That sub'o is actually dyeing it. Now, that tove, after you get the wool off the sheep, they would spin it. Which means by spinning it, you turn it into now thread. Vehamesach, or vehamesech. Now, in order to appreciate this concept of a mesech, I will direct you to the appendix of your art scrolls, where you see a full page that they have over there on the weaving process. Very, very important. Now, if you see over here, I will show you on the left side, you see in the second paragraph, you see there's a bar that has
threads that are dangling over it. That bar that they call it is the warp beam. Now, there you see it individually. When you look on the right side, you see exactly how the warp beam is used in the loom. That's the way they would weave things. Now, to dress the warp beam, they would take these threads and they would just place them over the warp beam. And then that would be the first stage, let's say, in preparing the loom for the weaving process. So that would be considered mesech, dressing the warp beam, and you're stretching the threads across the beam. That is mesech. Va'oseh shtei batei nirin. That's another melacha. Now the way that she learns this melacha is, if you look again at your weaving process, you see right at the beginning, you see there's two boards that you have over here. They're numbered 1 to 10. These items over here are actually in order to hold the strings that are running through them. Okay. They call them a harness. Okay, it's called a harness because it's holding the threads that are going through it. Now you see that there are little holes through these harnesses, like little ring holes in them. Now what they would do is they would stick the threads through these holes. Okay, now there were two harnesses. The way they would do it is they would stick it through one hole of one harness, and then it would go to the other harness next to the hole. So it goes through one hole, and then the next one, it's next to it. It passes through, so you have it alternating. Now, once you thread two threads through two holes, that's oseh shtei batei nirin. When you place two threads in these holes, they call them the heidel eyes, then already you're going to be, or the heidel eyes, you're going to be Hayav. It's oseh shtei batei nirin, putting the threads through these eyes on the harness that is going to be attached, or that makes up the actual loom itself. Now, ve'aoreg shnei chutin, and then one that actually weaves two threads. How do you weave? Now that you have, look at the next picture. Now that you have the loom set up in this process, so now you have all the, let's say, the threads straightened out. Now you have to run threads across in order to do the weaving process. So when one weaves, meaning he sends the threads across twice, she's across the whole width of the garment. When he does that twice, so then he's Hayav on Shabbat. That's Oreg Shnei Chutin. One that weaves two threads through the threads that are already lined up on the loom. Va'potseya shnei chutin. Potseya shnei chutin would be, quoted as she, if let's say after you have your garment, let's say, as you're weaving it, so you have all the threads going across, but let's say they become all bunched up, and you want to make some room for them, because now there's no space. So instead of stretching it out, what they would do is they would cut one, let's say. They would remove one, and therefore give it some more space so the threads fall evenly. So cutting a thread that's a little long, or that's causing a little, taking up too much of the space, that would be considered potseya, which means one that cuts Shnei chutin, one that cuts two threads that are little longer, and therefore you need to give them to cut them off. Hakosher, hakosher means one that is tying, one that makes a knot, and then you have the hamatir, one that takes out a knot. And the Gemara will explain where exactly in the Mishkan you had making knots and taking out knots. Regarding untying, the Tosafot has a safek if this is only untying with the intent to make a knot. Which means a lot of these melachot you're going to see have to have a positive result to it. So Tosfot says, could be it means that the only reason why you're going to be chayav on untying is if your intent is you're untying it out in order to retie it again. That's the way the Rosh sounds as well.
From a permanent knot. Untie from a
We'll see exactly the level of knots that we have to. The Mishnah continues. Vatofer shete tefirot, one that sews two stitches, which means he goes in and out, which means he makes a full stitch. Now, hakoreya almenat litfor, somebody that tears a garment with intention to stitch it two stitches, meaning sometimes you have, let's say, a round hole in the garment and it's hard to stitch it, so you need to make a slit in it in order to make it straight in order that you'll be able to stitch it again. So sew it. So therefore, if somebody rips something with the intention to re-sew it, that is hayab. Hasad svi. There's somebody that traps an animal on Shabbat. Again, in the Mishkan, you needed to trap animals because you needed their skins in order to make the coverings of the Mishkan. So there was trapping in the construction of the Mishkan. Svi would be a deer. Hashohato, one that slaughters it. Ve'amafshito, one that skins it. Hamolho, one that salts it, which means in the tanning process, to get the leather viable, they would have to salt it first. Ve'ame'abed, and then actually involve in the tanning itself of it. Et oro. Ve'ame'machako, one that smooths it out. Meaning, it seems that there's little hair that's still attached to the skins. In order to make them usable, you have to, let's say, take off those hairs. What it eventually does is it causes the skin to become smooth. So smoothening out would be called memachek. Vamehatecho. Mehatecho would mean one that cuts it up, which means now you have a piece of leather, you need to cut it up to use it either for shoes or for different functions. Hakotev shte otiyot. Somebody that writes two letters on Shabbat. Where did they write two letters on Shabbat? We're going to learn that on the Kirashim, on the boards that made up the wall of the Mishkan, they used to have a system to put them in pairs. They used to write letters on the boards in order to know which one goes or interlocks with its partner. V'amohek al menat lichtov shte otiyot. Or for that matter, somebody that erases on Shabbat with intention to rewrite two letters. So that's what happened in the Mishkan also. Seems if they made a mistake in the marking the boards, they would have to erase. Habone, somebody that constructs or builds something, that's soter. That would be somebody that demolishes. Hamchabe vehammavir. Hamchabe would mean somebody that extinguishes, puts out a fire. Vehammavir, somebody that ignites, makes a fire. Now, right away, somebody would ask, this is a good question, seemingly this is reversed. First you make a fire and then you put out a fire. So the answer might lie in the fact that if you hold like Rabbi Shimon holds that on Shabbat to be liable, it has to be a melacha shetzricha legufa. That means it's a melacha that you need the result of that melacha. For example, extinguishing in most cases is not a melacha shetzricha legufa. You just want to get rid of the fire. You're not interested in the positive result. It's more reactionary. You have a fire, you want to put it out. The only type of fire that putting out, according to the Mishnah, would be hayav, is if you're going to benefit from the extinguishing. How? By putting out the fire, you're making a coal. So therefore, you need the result of the extinguishing. So what they would normally do is, they would make a coal first, because now it's easier to light, and then they would light it again. So first, they would, you know, make the first, you know, extinguishing would be done first, so to speak, in order to make the coal. That type of mechabe would be, and then mavir, in order to allow it to be easier to relight. Therefore, it alluded to that point by putting mechabe before mavir. Now, I'd like to point out that the Rambam does not hold like Rabbi Shimon. Rambam was posek like Rabbi Yehuda. He holds that to be hayab, it doesn't even have to be a melacha shesnicha legufa. Even if you just did the melacha for any purpose, it's going to be hayab. And it's interesting, if you look at Rambam, when he lists the melachot, he puts mavir before mechabeh. So that's very telling. Furthermore, there's an interesting difference between the way we have the melachot and the way Rambam has the melachot. We have it hazoreya, the one that plants, the one that plows, which means we're talking about, we're referring to all the melachot by the fellow that's doing the melacha, the fellow that is lighting, the fellow that is extinguishing. Where Rambam has it just as the melachot, horesh, zoreya, kotzer, me'amer. So what's the difference between that? Why do we refer to the person and the Rambam refers it to the melacha? Could be because Rambam, it doesn't matter what the intention of the person is. So long as the melacha is done, if you hold like the Yehuda that says the melacha, so hayav in all scenarios. So therefore it doesn't matter what your intention, if you want the result, if you don't want the result, therefore the melacha itself. Whereas if you're holding like Rabbi Shimon, so then already it's hazoreya, yeah, it's the guy, which is the guy is a factor in the melacha, meaning you have to know the guy's intent, what exactly he's interested in the result. Hence, that diyuk also stands. The last of the melachot, one of them is hamakeh bepatish. Makeh bepatish literally means one that is banging with the hammer. What is that case over there? So that she learns that at the end of a person that was using a hammer, he would want to smoothen his hammer out, so he would bang it on the anvil. He says that would be the last melacha that he would do at the, you know, when he's working with, let's say, metal. He would just give one more bang on the anvil with his hammer. That's like they're adding the last, the final process, you know, to smooth out his hammer at the end. So makeh bepatish. Others argue on that she and say that's not makeh bepatish. They learn it. It's a vessel, let's say, that became warped or something. You just bang it in order to straighten it out again. That's makeh bepatish. Others learn like the Benu Hananel. No, it's like you have a rock, let's say, in a wall, and you smooth it out to make it straight. So that would be makeh bepatish. Basically, it's like the adding the final touch to the melacha. And again, the Gemara will elaborate on that. Hamotzi mirshut rishut. One that carries something from one domain to another domain, from a rishut yahid to a rishut rabim, for example. Hare elu avot melachot arba'im haser achat. The Mishnah again repeats, these are the 39 melachot. The Gemara will ask that question, why does it have to say again, these are the 39 melachot. Now we move to the Amud Bet. Gemara asks, Minyana lamali. What do you need to tell me in the beginning of the Mishnah, 39 melachot? Again, this is a question that we had just today on the Amud Rishon. And we know the answer already. Amar of Yohanan, Shim Asan Kulam Be'alem Ahad, Hayav and Kol Ahad Ve'ahad. To teach us that if you did all 39 melachot in one lapse, you're going to be Hayav on all 39, which is each melacha is haluk. They stand individual, and therefore you're hayav for each one. Now we start analyzing the melachot themselves. Hazoreya v'achoresh. Person that sows, and then he plows. Mechti, let's analyze. Mechrav charbe beresha. Normally a person plows first. Mechrav charbe is the plow. Litni, the Mishnah should have stated Horesh Ve'adar Litni Zoraya, and then tell me Zoraya. The Gemara answers Tana Be'eretz Yisrael Kaye. The one that redacted the Mishnah, the Benu Akadosh, where were they living? In Eretz Yisrael. So the Mishnah was written in Israel. Now in Israel the practice of farming was the Zarei Beresha. First they would seed the land, ve'adar charbe, and then they would plow. Why? the land of Eretz Yisrael is very, very hard. So therefore, they would actually plow twice. They would plow first to soften the land up, and then they would drop the seeds in, but they would need a second additional plowing in order that the seeds get covered by the earth. So the Hiddush of the Mishnah is that not only the first plowing, which obviously is Hayav, even the second plowing that follows Zoreya, for example, the Eretz Yisrael, that plowing is also going to be Hayav. Tana, we have a Tana extend, we have a Braita. Hazoreya, Ve'azomer, Ve'anoteya, Ve'amavrich, Ve'amarkiv, Kulan Melacha Achaten. The Braita lists five different Melachot. Let's get the terminologies clear. Zoreya means planting seeds. Zomer would be pruning. What is pruning? A person has a tree, he cuts branches, and the reason why one prunes, because that inspires growth, that causes it to grow more. Hanoteya, one that plants trees. The difference between zoreya and noteya is one that plants a tree is noteya, it's like a sapling, a small tree, and zoreya would be putting seeds in the ground. Ve'amavrich. Mavrich is usually done by small trees or vines. What they do is they take the top of the vine and they turn it down and replant it in the ground. So again, they're replanting the vine from its head into the ground again until it takes root, and then they snap it. They cut it in the middle. Now you have two vines that are going. That's called Mavrich. The fifth item that it lists here is Markiv. Markiv is grafting. Grafting is where you place another tree and you attach it to another tree, you tie it up in order that it takes hold together. Now you grafted two different trees. Yeah, we're discussing either in cases where grafting would be permissible, or you're talking about a guy that did it Isul, but we're discussing now regarding Shabbat. So again, Hazoreya, Hazomer, Hanoteya, Hamavrich, Hamarkib, Kulan Melacha Achaten. They're all basically the same Melacha. What do they have in common? They're all involved in growing, causing things to grow, planting, growing, etc. So the Gemara says, Maika Mashmalan. What's the Hiddush over here? Haka Mashmalan. It's coming to teach you. Ha'oseh Melachot Arbeh. That if a person does many melachot, me'en melacha achat, but from the same family of melachot, enu hayav ela achat. He's only going to be hayav one. For example, in one lapse, if a guy did all these five, bottom line, he's only going to be hayav one. Now the question just here is, for technical purposes, we want to know, how do you classify these? Which is, we know that there's avot melachot, there's primary melachot, and then you have what's called Toladot, Toladot are the offshoots of the Avot. Now, for practical purposes, you hayav chatat on the Avot as well as the Toladot. You're both subject to hayav chatat, to sekira. It's also a suit from the Torah, obviously. It's just one is called an Av and one is called a Tolada. So these five, which one of them are Avot and which one of them are Toladot? So shitat Rashi over here is that Zoreya is obviously a melacha, it's an av, and Noteya is also an av. It's just that Zoreya is with seeds and Noteya is with trees. But it's the same av melacha, we consider a primary melacha. And then she also holds that Mavrich and Markiv, which is also involved in the planting process, is also considered av melacha. The only tolada out of the five, according to Rashi, is Zomer. Zomer, which is pruning, he says that's a tolada of Noteya. That's a tolada of Noteya, which would be planting the tree, which would be planting the tree, causes it to grow. Pruning also causes it to grow, but it's not exactly planting, so therefore it's cutting, pruning, so therefore it's not an av, but it would be a tolada. Now, that's Shitat Rashi. However, there's great arguments amongst the Rishonim,
how to classify all these cases. For example, you have the opinion of the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchot Shabbat Perek Zayin Halacha Gimal that all five are avot melachot, including Zoraya. That's the Ritba's opinion as well. You have other Rishonim that come along and say that Zoraya and Noteya are the avot, and the other three are considered Toladot. Now, bottom line, according to everybody, if you did all of them, they ale mahad in one lap, you're only going to be hayav one. Now, it will come out a difference if a person is doing a melacha on Shabbat as a mahlok and amongst lishonim, of course you have to warn him. So are you allowed to warn somebody if he's doing a tolada? Could you warn him on the av? For example, if you hold zomer is a tolada, and you tell the guy, hey, don't be noteya, is that considered a legal warning or not? Or do you have to actually give him the warning for the tolada that he's doing? So now already you see where this would come into play over here, are these avot toladot, you'll have a nafkamina in the warning that is given. Comes the Gemara and continues. Amar Rav Acha. Rav Acha came and taught Amar Rav Chayab Bar Asher, Amar Rav Ameh. Okay, in the name of all these rabbis. Zomer, which is pruning, Hayav Mishum Notaya. Good. Zomer is Hayav Mishum Notaya. Either, as we learned to the coin to Shitat Rashi, it's a tolada of Notaya. Okay, it's in the same family. Just like planting causes the tree to grow, so pruning it also causes it to grow. V'anoteya, and noteya, when you're planting trees, v'amavrich, v'amarkiv, and all those other things, markiv, mavrich would be placing it back into the ground on the other side, v'amarkiv, grafting, hayav mishum zoraya. She's these items, noteya, mavrich, and markiv, they're hayav mishum zoraya, from the law of zoraya. So, that she says, Chayav Mishum Zoraya, Kelomar, meaning to say, Inu Nami Zorayayin, which means these things also are planting, Ze Ab Bezeraim, Veze Ab Bilanot. It's just one is by seeds and one is by trees. So the Gemara says, wait, Mishum Zorayayin, Mishum Noteya, lo? You tell me these items, Markiv, Mavrich, Noteya, it's Chayav Mishum Zoraya, it's mashma, only Zoraya and not Noteya? The Gemara says, no, Ema Af Mishum Zoraya, which is even Mishum Zoraya, meaning, of course it's Chayav Mishum Noteya, it's trees. The Hiddush is, it's even Zoraya, which means, technically if a guy would come along and give the guy a warning and say, well, when you see the guy grafting and you tell him, hey, don't be Zoraya, it's also under the category of Zoraya. So basically all these melachot are in one family. Amar Rav Kana. Rav Kana comes along and says, Zomer v'sarich la'itzim. Okay, new case. A guy Zomer, he prunes. Now normally when you prune, what do you do with the branches that you collected from the tree? You throw them out. However, this case over here is Zomer v'sarich la'itzim. He's going to use the wood he cut. He's going to use the wood. Hayav shtayim. In that case, he's hayav two. What is hayav two? One, achad mishum kotser. One, because of reaping. Because just like reaping, you cut the wheat to use the wheat. Here, you're cutting wood to use the wood. So that's the miraka of kotser, harvesting. Ve'achad mishum noteya. And one, because of noteya, which by pruning, you're causing the tree to grow. So therefore, you'd be hayav two. Now, of course, if you were Zomer and you didn't need the wood, it'd only be Hayav Mishum, one. Mishum Noteya. Amar of Yosef. Now, the next case. Hay man de katal aspasta. A guy that cuts aspasta. What is aspasta? It was a certain plant that they used to grow in the fields, and they used to cut it, as she says, three times a month. It grows very quickly, and they would use it to feed to the animals. So the Gemara says, "Ay man de katan aspasta, hayav shtayim." You have two. Ehat mishum kotzer, one because of harvesting, because bottom line you're going to use it to feed the animals. Ve'ehat mishum noteya, and also for plants, because by cutting it, it makes it grow. Right? The only way the new stuff grows, I got to cut the old aspasta. Now the Gemara says, "Amar Abaye, hay man de kaniv silka." A guy that comes and he cuts from the ground beets. Silka's beets. Hayav shtayim. Hayav two. Ehat mishum kotzer. One because you're harvesting it, meaning you're going to take the beets and use them. So that's like harvesting. Ehat mishum zoreya. They change that. He changes it to noteya. Well, the point is, by cutting the beets, it causes them to grow again. So therefore, see specifically beets, that's the way they cause them to grow. You don't have to plant them again. You just cut. And it just restarts to go. Then we hayab ishum, kotzer, and zorei onoteya. Why do you need all these?
This one, if you have the previous one.
What's the chidush in this case here as well? Well, as she says, chose chotech teradim in a mechubad vechozim vegederin. Actually, these were said by different rabbis. It was not made by the same rabbi, so therefore each one himself said it on his own. The Gemara just puts all the statements that are relevant to each other together. If one rabbi said all the statements, then already we'd have to give a tzlichuta. Okay, now we go back to analyze the second melacha, choresh, plowing. Tana choresh, v'achofer, v'achoretz, kulan melacha achate. Let's get the terminology. Choresh would be plowing. Chofer would be digging. The Mefarshim explained the only difference between choresh and chofer is you just use different instruments to make the hafira or the harisha. Vachoretz is one that makes a furrow in the ground. Kulan melacha achaitin. Basically, they're all under the same melacha of choresh. Amar Rav Sheshat. And what's the common denominator? As she says, they soften the ground. Amar Rav Sheshat, hayta lo gavshushit. Let's say he had a mound of dirt. Vinatla, and he removed the mound of dirt. Babayit, if the mound of dirt is in your house, hayav mishum boneh. So then you're going to be hayav because of constructing. Why? Because in your house, there's no plowing in your house. No one plows in the house. But he wants his floor to be level. Now, when you have a mound of dirt, by removing the dirt, so you're fixing the floor by making it level in your house, the transgression would be boneh, your building. Besadeh, yes, you took it away. Besadeh, now you caused the floor to be leveled. That's a form of construction. You took something away in order to make it better, livable now. No, demolition means you did something destructive. Here you did something destructive. The way I fixed the floor is I got to remove the gavshushit. Now, besadeh, if you did the same thing in the field, where you remove this gavshushit, this mound, hayab mishum choresh. Why? Because it seems that when you remove this mound, it softens the ground that's underneath it. And therefore what you did is, through the removal of the gavshushit in the field, you soften the ground. So that already is choresh. Now, in the house, you might have also softened the ground. But we don't discuss choresh in a house. No one's softening the ground in order to plant in his house. Therefore it's boneh, because he leveled the ground. Amar Rava, haitala guma. We'll give it an opposite case. Let's say a guy had a hole, vitmema, and he filled it. Bebayit, if it's in his house, hayab mishum boneh. So that's already building, because you construct by filling the hole up, you smoothen the floor in the house so it's level. Basadeh, but if you did it in your field, hayab mishum choresh. Then you hayab mishum plowing. Why? Because now in your field, you can't plant if there's a hole over there. By filling it up with dirt, the dirt obviously is soft if you filled it up. Now already you made your field level where it's now viable for planting. What does harisha do? It prepares the field for planting, for sowing. And therefore, in the field it's going to be hayab mishum choresh. Amar Rabbi Abba. Ha-chofer guma b'shabbat.
a person digs a hole on Shabbat, ve'enu tzarich ela le'afara, but all he needs is the dirt, which means he doesn't need the hole itself. Patur aleha, he's going to be patur. Ve'afilu le'Rabbi Yehuda, I mean patur from hatat. Ve'afilu le'Rabbi Yehuda, even according to Rabbi Yehuda de'amar, melacha she'ena slicha le'gufa chayav aleha. Which means we know, as we mentioned earlier, you have a machloket between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda regarding the subject of melacha she'ena tzlicha legufa. Let's review that machloket. On Shabbat, when a person does one of the 39 melachot, Rabbi Shimon says the melachot have to be similar to the way they were done in the Mishkan. The melachot in the Mishkan were all done for constructive purposes. Each melacha was done because they needed the result of the melacha. And therefore on Shabbat to be hayav, it has to be executed modeling the way it was done in the Mishkan. That's called the melacha shetziricha legufa. Example, in this case, where the guy dug a hole, but he doesn't need the hole. He needs the dirt. The melacha is making the hole. And therefore, according to the Bishimon, if a person did this, let's say, bishogeg, without, unintentionally, inadvertently, he would not be subject to a korban hatat. Why? Because he does not need the melacha that he does. He's just doing it for the dirt. The melacha is not in the dirt, it's in the hole. That's melacha she'ena tziricha legufa patur. Rabbi Yehuda comes along and he has a much more flexible understanding of melachot. They don't have to be exactly like they were done in the Mishkan. He says even it's ena tzricha legufa hayav, meaning that even if it's reactionary. What does reactionary mean? For example, the classic case that Rabbi Yehuda brings is, God forbid, somebody dies, and now they have to transport him from one domain to another domain. He dies outside in the sun, they have to bring him inside. So you're going from Neshut Rabim to Neshut Yachid. So that would be technically a case of Melacha She'ena Tzlicha Legufa, because you don't need technically this carrying over here, which means you would have rathered that you didn't have to carry. It's not for a constructive purpose, it's reactionary. Something happened now you have to fix it. But you wouldn't have gone out, or you know, on your own wishing that this would happen. So Rabbi Shimon would say in this case, that type of carrying is patur. When is carrying hayav according to Rabbi Shimon? When you want the object from here to there. Positively, here, you didn't want the object to go from here to here, you didn't want it to start off with. You're just reacting now to a negative that happened. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda will say, in that case, hayav. So that's basically the machloket. It's the way that she understands the machloket. At least Tosfot later on in the Masechet has a different understanding. When we get to, we'll interpret it. Now, regarding our case over in the Gemara, a guy digs a hole on Shabbat. He needs the dirt. For sure, according to Rabbi Shimon, this is the melachah shena serekha legufa, you'll be patur from hatat. The Hiddush of the Gemara is, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, that says melacha shena tzidika legufa chayav, he'll agree in this case you're going to be patur. What's the difference? So the Gemara says, hani mile metaken. Where does the Bishimon say melacha shena tzidika legufa is when you're doing something of a tikkun, where you're doing something that's positive, where you're doing something that, so to speak, you're fixing. It's not a negative. Hai mekalkelu. But here, he's destroying. Which means if we're talking about a guy in his house, bottom line, the guy made a hole in his floor now. So this is something that is destructive. And it's a melacha she'ena tzlicha legufa. A melacha she'ena tzlicha legufa bekilkul. Even Rabbi Yehuda says patur. Meaning, why did Rabbi Yehuda say melacha she'ena tzlicha legufa hayav? Bitikun. For example, let's say this case was in a field. Or let's say, for that matter, the guy wanted and needed the hole because the hole benefits him. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would say,
That the truth of the matter is, if you needed the whole, even the Bishimon would say you're going to be hayav because it's melachas gufa. But here, since the whole is destructive, I'm just giving you a scenario in a person's home, for example, definitely destructive. Therefore, even the Yehuda would say, but you have to remember that because that's a very important caveat to the mahlok of the Bishimon and the Yehuda. He doesn't always hold melachas gufa hayav if it's a kilkul. El mi patur. Comes the Gemara continues. We go to the next melacha. The hakotzer. Kotzer is harvesting. Tana. Hakotzer. Habotzer. Hagoder. Vehamasik. Vehaoreh. Kulan melacha achat. So we listed over here five melachot that are all under the same umbrella. What is it? Kotzer is by wheat, let's say. That's harvesting wheat. Botzer is, let's say, picking grapes. You call that boser. Hagoded, that she says, that's by dates. The masik, that would be by olives. The ore, that would be by figs. So each harvesting each item is called a different terminology, but basically it's under the same avmelacha of kotzer. So you have kotzer, Botzer, Goder, Masik, and Ore. Kulam lakahat. Amara papa. Hai man de shadap pisal de dikla. You have a fellow that threw a clump of dirt at a palm tree. The dikla is a palm tree. Ve atar tamre. And it caused a cluster of dates to fall. Hayav shtayim. So you hayav two melachot over here. Ahat mishum tolesh. Which we understand. One, because you detach something from its source, right, from the ground. V'achat mishum mefarek. And one, because of the melacha called mefarek. Now, what is mefarek? Well, mefarek is not actually one of the 39 proper. As she says, it's a tolda of the melacha of dash. What is dash? Dash is, like we learned earlier, threshing. When you crush the wheat in order to separate it from its chaff, so mefarek is also when you're removing something from something else. So the way that she learns over here is mefarek is you're removing the date from the tree. And Tosafot doesn't really accept that is mefarek. That has really had nothing to do with mefarek. Dash was, you have an item that has a shell on it, and you're separating the shell to get to the kernel. What does this got to do with mefarek? So therefore, some want to learn that Rabbi Yochanan holds that the date itself had a shell on it, like a little shell around it. When you knock it off the tree and it hits the ground, it causes that shell to open up. So that would be, it's not dash. Dash is by wheat. So it would be a toldav. Dash would be mefarek. That's the way. They want to learn it. In any event, it should be pointed out, according to the Tosafot, he says there's no mefarek here at all. Take out mefarek. He had like a different gersa. He said, you just hayav mishum todesh. And because he holds mefarek is nothing to do with dash. He learns mefarek is something else. He learns mefarek is a toda of the melachah mimahek, of smoothing out. So then we have a whole mahlokin on this concept of mefarek. Is it a subdivision of dash? Then you'd have to learn it in cases like our case over here where you're cracking the shell of the date open and things like that. Or is it mimahek, what is smoothening? And we'll see that later on, cases where you'll have enough kamina. Comes the Gemara and says, Rav Asher amar, en derech telisha bekach, ve'en derech perika bekach. Rav Asher says, in this case over here, you're patur on both accounts. Why? Because it's not the normal way to detach a date from a tree by throwing a clump of dirt in it. So therefore, you're doing it in a not normal fashion. Therefore, you're not going to be hayav. On Shabbat to be hayav, you have to do it in the normal way. It's not the normal way. It's not the normal way to detach that way, nor is the normal way if you hold it mefarek. That's not the normal way you'd be mefarek. But, you know, throwing it, letting it fall on the ground, and then cracking the shell. So therefore, Rav Ashi would say, of course, it's asur. It's just that you're patur from a korban chatat. A tent?
Intent to do it like that.
No, his intent was that. But so long as you do it in a not normal fashion, it's not considered a melachah that you could be subject to a korban chatan. Last case, ve'ameamer. Me'amer, we said, is collecting or gathering. After you harvest the wheat, you collect them into bundles. Amar Rava, hay man dechanif milcha mimilcheta. Hayav, mishum me'amer. A fellow that goes and collects salt from the quarry where the salt is mined, hayav mishum me'amer, because you're collecting the salt. Abaye amar, Abaye says no. En imur ela begedule karka. He gives a rule. Imur is only subject to things that grow from the ground. Salt does not grow from the ground. And therefore it has to be like me'amer wheat. Wheat is the classical case. Wheat grows from the ground. So we have a machloket over here amongst the Amoraim, the extent of when you're going to be chayav me'amer, which is, you have to know, this is a very important fact that you have to keep in mind when you discuss halakha. The question would be, there's a guy who has in his house toys that are all scattered around. Now he wants to collect them. So if you hold that en imur ela begedule karka, which is really the halakha, we posek like Abaye, so there's no law of imur on that case. Comes the Gemara and continues, v'hadash. Dash is the melakha of threshing. Tana, we have a braita. Hadash, v'haminapetz, v'haminafit. Kula melakha achate. Just let's define the terminologies. Dash we know, that's threshing the wheat. What is minapetz? Now, minapetz, Rashi tells us, pishtan begibolim, which means you're banging the flax in order to get them out of their stalks. Now, you have to be aware that normally minapetz means to comb. However, over here, we're taking it in a different interpretation. It means you're actually banging them, just like you would dash the wheat. You bang them in order to separate it from its stalk. Or you have the third case would be minapit. That she says, what is minapit? Let's read that as she inside. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines on the bottom. Tzimir gefen bekeshet. They would take a certain type of bow and they would bang the cotton. Kederech ha'umanim. Now, betzimir gefen gedoleh karkahu. Tzimir gefen grows from the ground. La'achi kari niput dileh toldah dedash. That's why it's called a toldah of dash. So Rashi's clearly learning that these are toladot of dash, because dash we know can only be in the ground, correct? Because dash is by wheat. And therefore, minapet is taking cotton and you're banging in order to get out its pits. It has pits in there. Shemefarek gar'inim memenu. Velo karile toldat minapetz tesemer. Which means, minapetz, that was the second one, right? I told you that that's talking about the pishtan. Pishtan grows from the ground. That's the flax that grows from the ground. How do we know it cannot be talking about wool? Because wool comes from an animal. There's no subject of dash on wool because it's not gedulei karka. So therefore we're forced to explain that minapetz is referring to doing something, banging the flax that grows from the ground in order to, let's say, separate it or clean it out somehow. So therefore, you have three melachot of it. Dash, minapet, I'm sorry, minapetz, which would be by the flax, or minapet, which would be by the cotton. All are toladot, at least according to the Rashi, of dash. Now, last but not least, the aruch, that's one of the Rishonim, he learns minapetz, nofetz afrudit minamachal, that you're shaking off the dirt or the dust off of food. So that's an important interpretation, and that would have to be discussed in halakha. On Shabbat, if a person has he has fruit that's dirty and soiled, would he be allowed to clean them? But that's not for this shiur. That's just, I say, food for thought, no pun intended. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen. Amen.